Faith and Family is a production of KFUO Radio. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere, since 1924. Text the letters KFUO to 41444 to join the legacy with your tax-deductible gift. Listening to Faith and Family, I'm Andy Bates. Today we're talking about the upcoming Speak Up Conference taking place in Fort Wayne, Indiana, November 8th. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. Joining me now, the Reverend Dr. Rick Mars. He's Associate Professor of Practical Theology and the Director of the Master of Divinity Program and Resident Alternate Route Programs at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Mars, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thank you very much for having me, Andy.
A pleasure always to talk with you about the church and mental health and sharing with our listeners about this today, some insights into your background and your professional work. I know that you've studied and taught quite a bit in this area concerning mental health. Give us just an insight into to your work and your professional background.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a different background than other seminary professors. Actually, I was a layman who was teaching psychology and working as a professional counselor for the first 15 years or so of my professional life. I worked at St. John's College in Winfield as a psychology professor and also a counselor in a counseling center. And then when it closed, I was doing the same sort of thing, teaching psychology and working as a counselor at Concordia Chicago while I worked on my PhD in counseling and psychology from Loyola University. And so just have a deep background in that sort of area, trying to look at it from a Christian perspective. And then at age 40, I looked at my dear wife and said, honey, would you stay married to me if I left academia and went to seminary and became a parish pastor? And she said she would. So we loaded up the kids and came to the seminary. I was then in the parish for 6 years in Kansas and thought I was going to be there for many, many years to come. I was enjoying the teaching and the preaching and the pastoral care and counseling things I was doing, but the seminary called and said, we're having a hard time finding Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastors who have a background in counseling and psychology like you do. Would you come and interview? Which eventually led to a call to teach here. So it's been a wonderful last 11 years teaching pastoral counseling to the next generation of pastors to be in our denomination.
What would you say is important for us to understand about counseling and mental health when it comes to what is the essence of your work? You know, what are you doing in helping shape future pastors and other church workers when it comes to understanding counseling and mental health?
Yeah, it's really a matter of helping, again, future pastors, but also congregational leaders and Christian lay people in general to understand that just like we have physical problems with our bodies, we have heart disease, we have cancer, we have all kinds of other ailments that because of our sinful condition, because of the groaning world that we live in, according to Paul in Romans 8, we also have mental health issues. And some people struggle with things like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or depression or anxiety disorders or a whole host of other things that our culture labels in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. And while that's a helpful way of looking at it, it's not the only way of looking at it, and that DSM is not a pastoral care guide at all, spiritual care guide. It's a secular document. It at least is something that pastors and church people should know a little bit, just like they should know a little bit about heart disease. And like I tell students, if one of your parishioners comes to your office and says, Pastor, would you sit down and pray with me? I have this problem. And the pastor would say, well, sure, yeah, what's your problem? And the And the parishioner says, well, I've got this pain in the upper left quadrant of my chest, and it's kind of shooting down my arm. Well, then I would say, we're going to say a very quick prayer, but then we're going to get in my car, and I'm going to drive you to the hospital because you may be having a heart attack, and I want you to get treatment by the medical doctors who know much more about heart issues than what I as a pastor does. Well, in the same way, somebody with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or one of a whole host of other things, pastors are not experts in treating them for that, but they are still their pastor who provides the spiritual care and guidance and the questions that come up about, you know, why is this happening to me? Does God still love me because I'm struggling with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder? And giving them the assurance of the gospel that God is there for us all, whether we have heart disease, cancer, or mental health issues. Congregations and pastors need to know at least a little bit about the diagnosis of those things and how to do good Christian care for those issues, spiritual care for those issues, even though they are what we call first article issues, you know, having to do with the created order and the decline, the groaning in the created order that we're going through until Jesus comes again.
You've expressed this already to some degree, the importance of teaching congregations, lay leaders, and clergy, church workers about issues surrounding mental health. You're a presenter, a speaker at the Speak Up Conference in Fort Wayne, coming up in November. And why is it important to you to be a part of this, to teach congregations, to teach church workers and lay people as well about mental health issues and the church?
Yeah, well, it is so important because, again, in some cases, some misguided Christians, and what I tend to think of as kind of fundamentalistic Christians or fundamentalistic pastors, have this misguided notion that if you just pray harder with somebody, if you just, you know, tell them the right Bible verse or whatever, that their mental health issues will go away. And while it is important to share scripture and to pray with people who are struggling with these issues, they need to understand that there are first article dynamics. There are things going on in their brains. You know, the chemistry of their brain, the neurochemistry of their brain may not work as well as it does for the rest of us, just like for some people, their hearts don't work as well. And so having that kind of realization, they won't simplistically just say, well, I'm going to be the only counselor for you. You know, if they've got a parishioner who has ADHD, hyperactivity disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, you know, getting them to the right doctor, to the right psychiatrist that might be able to help them, their child, through this ADHD is just extremely important. And like I say, you know, no competent pastor would ever tell his parishioner, stop taking your insulin because you don't really need it because you can just pray harder for your diabetes. You know, some fundamentalists and some Christians go that direction with mental health issues. I heard a tragic story actually at the last conference I was at about a woman who went to a Christian counseling agency in Texas and was treated well over a three-week outpatient day clinic that they had at this Meyer hospitalization process. Mm-hmm. And then the person went back to their home congregation, which was actually in Israel. It was a Christian congregation of Jewish Christians in Israel, and the pastor and the people there convinced that person who had gotten over a lot of her depression to go off of her depression meds. So she believed her pastor and the people in that congregation. She went off her depression meds. She fell back into a deep depression and eventually took her own life. And after she took her own life, the people in that congregation and the pastor contacted the clinic that she had gone to in Texas and repented of their sin of telling her to go off of her meds. And that congregation now has completely changed its mind and does encourage people to go and use medication when appropriate. Now, I do like to balance that with, I believe that we are an over-medicated culture in the United States, that too many people go to their doctors and say, I'm feeling a little nervous, please give me a pill. And we over-medicate people for a whole variety of things. I'd say we're probably giving two or three times as many of these drugs out as what we should. But that's a big picture issue, not an individual parishioner issue, usually. So having individual parishioners feel comfortable knowing that they should take their antidepressant or their anti-bipolar drug, just like they would take insulin if they had diabetes.
At the upcoming Speak Up conference, your presentation is When You Hear Hoofbeats, Proper Distinctions Between Mental Illness and Spiritual Oppression and Possession. Mm-hmm. How do we know the difference between mental illness and spiritual possession? Is there a difference, or are they one and the same?
Yeah, no, I think there's some very important differences, and you'll have to come to the conference to actually hear me talk about it for an hour or so. We do believe that there is spiritual possession and oppression still in this world. The devil is active, and he is out there attacking people. I do not believe, and all the colleagues at the seminary that I've spoken with believe the same thing, we do not believe that a Christian who has been baptized can actually be possessed by a demon internally. But we do believe that there is spiritual oppression out there, and the spiritual world is becoming a little more open here, even in the United States. I used to say, when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras, is the old adage. In North America, if you hear hoofbeats, it's not very often is it going to be a zebra. But if I was in Africa and I heard hoofbeats, I would think, hey, that might be a zebra. Well, the same thing, a lot of African pastors and missionaries report to us that they see a lot of spiritual oppression and possession among people who are largely spiritists and animists, and the devil doesn't mind showing himself in those situations because he knows he can scare people. I think in our North American culture, the devil tries to stay a little more hidden, and that's why we don't see a lot of that, although we're seeing more of it. And again, you can't go to a movie theater without there being some sort of horror film about spiritual demons or somebody attacking somebody in the spirit world. Our culture is really obsessed with this idea. But in the presentation I want to make is just that while there is spiritual oppression, and obviously Jesus cast out demons and the apostles cast out demons, there's not a lot of that that happened in the Bible. I mean, it was just kind of that New Testament generation that did the bulk of that. We still see it in the church since the New Testament times, but we also see biblical texts about mental illness, and a lot of people don't remember those. They start to think that, this mental illness is just, or the spiritual oppression is masking itself as mental illness. Well, there's actually Deuteronomy 28, where Yahweh tells the people he will strike them down with madness and blindness and confusion of mind, the Hebrew words shigaon and timahom levav, if they disregard his word. The Old Testament people, even at the time of Moses, understood madness. And the other one that I really like, there's several Bible verses about this, but 1 Samuel 21, David actually fakes being insane when he's in the Philistine king's area, because the Philistine kings come to him and want him to fight on their side against the Israelites. And David, while he's hiding from Saul, finds himself in this difficult situation where he doesn't want to fight against Saul actively with the Philistines, because he's not Philistine either, but he doesn't want to get in trouble with the Philistines. So he actually fakes like he's crazy. And the Philistine king actually looks at the other generals and goes, do I lack madmen? So it's, again, just some biblical evidence that David knew what insanity looked like. He knew what mental illness looked like. He maybe didn't have the DSM-5 to properly diagnose it in the way we do in our culture here today, but he knew what what the mental illness looked like, and he was able to fake it in front of a Philistine king, so the Philistine king believed it, because it was a common occurrence in Philistia, apparently, that lots of people had mental illness. The good news is now we have drugs and treatments for mental illness that they didn't have even 50 or 100 years ago that do help significantly people to have relatively normal lives rather than the extremely troubled lives that they would have if they are flagrantly fluidly schizophrenic or hallucinating or having delusions and so forth. If they are floridly psychotic, then they would have a horrible life experience. The drugs, for the most part, 70 or 80% of the time, do help people manage their lives to be somewhat normal, fairly normal, as well as the professional counseling that they can get from Christians and others as they're struggling through their lifetime. So yeah, there are ways to diagnose between mental illness and spiritual possession, and that's what I'm going to get into more in the presentation itself.
Why is it important for us to distinguish the difference between the two? And then what step do we take from there when we distinguish between mental illness and spiritual possession? Why is it important to be able to distinguish between the two?
Well, yeah, kind of like I was saying before, if it is a mental illness, then we want to make sure the person's getting the right treatment for it and the right drugs, the right sort of counseling and so forth. If it is spiritual oppression, spiritual possession, then we have to approach that from literally an exorcistic sort of process, a calling out in the name of Jesus, calling out those demons, sending them away, which is in some ways a fairly straightforward thing to do in the name of Jesus. I'm going to be talking a little bit about Robert Bennett's book, Afraid, mm-hmm. which was published by CPH a few years ago. And I think Robert does a good job, Pastor Bennett, does a good job of kind of ferreting out the distinctions, and actually does say that, you know, a lot of what's going on here is mental illness in North America, but there is this other evidence of spiritual oppression, and it's growing in our country. And I believe that, too. I've seen it. I've visited New Orleans and seen how many people are caught up in the spiritist kind of religion down there, and that has spread throughout the United States. So we need to approach that from a spiritual perspective. And then there are some people that might be struggling with some of both, because just because somebody has a mental illness doesn't mean the devil says, oh, I'm not going to bother them anymore. I'm just going to let their mental illness. He can torment people from two different directions, both from their physical health and from their spiritual health. And that may happen in some cases. And therefore, pastors and psychiatrists and psychologists and counselors all need to be working together in those sorts of situations.
What do you want us to learn from your session? What do you want us to be equipped with when we walk away from your session at the Speak Up Conference?
Well, primarily that the Bible does speak about both of those things. It does speak about mental illness, and it does speak about spiritual oppression and possession, and that we can be involved in both worlds, should be involved in both worlds. Both worlds are important for us to provide spiritual care to people who are troubled either by their mental illness or by their oppression by spirits or both, and how to do that, again, as competently as we can in both arenas.
My guest today, the Reverend Dr. Rick Mars. He's Associate Professor of Practical Theology and Director of the Master of Divinity Program and Resident, the Resident Alternate Route Programs at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and presenting at the upcoming Speak Up Conference in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the Church and Mental Health. Dr. Mars, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very much, Andy. It's been a pleasure.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.